Welcome to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. Richard's going to take the next few minutes to share some great words of hope, insight, humor, and relevance. In today's lost and searching world, that's something everyone desperately needs to hear. Speaking of that, we'd love to keep this conversation going with you anytime through our website, richardellistalks.com. In fact, there's so many ways to connect with us from there that you really need to check it out for yourself, richardellistalks.com. But right now, let's go ahead and get things off and running with today's talk. Here's Richard Ellis.
The title of today's message is Slingshot. If you know anything about cycling, NASCAR, racing in general, but those two especially, I love to watch the Tour de France. We have people here who ride a ton and will know exactly what some of this is about. One article said, similar to the Belgian tourniquet in cycling, the slingshot pass is the most dramatic and widely noted maneuver associated with drafting. A trailing car, perhaps pushed by a line of drafting cars, uses the lead car's wake to pull up with maximum momentum at the end of a straightaway, enters a turn high, and turns down across the lead car's wake. The combination of running downhill and running across the zone of lowest aerodynamic drag allows the trailing car to carry extra speed and pass on the inside of the leader. Drafting was discovered by stock car racers in the 1960 Daytona 500 when Junior Johnson found that he could use drafting as a strategy to help him overcome the fact that his Chevrolet could not keep up with other cars. Nothing personal against Chevys, it's just what it says. Allowing him to win the race. Like Johnson, other drivers found they picked up speed running closely behind other cars. And as they experimented, they found that a line of cars could sustain higher speeds and or use less gas, resulting in fewer pit stops than a single car running by itself. So they realized that together we can do more than running by ourselves. And if you watch any NASCAR at all now, you see a line of cars tucked in, the lead car drafting for the rest of them. They have to get out sooner or later because that dirty air coming off the front of those cars, they don't get enough in the radiator, can overheat, so you have to be careful with this. But they can go a lot faster and farther together than they can alone. Now go to 1 Samuel chapter 17, if you would. And I keep coming back to this story and finding stuff, so you're going to have to put up with the stuff I'm finding. But 1 Samuel chapter 17, I'd like to talk to you about an actual slingshot in this story. And some people never heard this story. Some of you are like, hey, I could almost quote the whole thing, tell you every detail. A giant, a Philistine giant, has challenged Israel. And the two nations, the Philistines, Israel, have come together into battle. And this giant has come out and said, look, basically, I'll simplify this. I challenge one of your guys. You bring one guy out here, and whoever wins, the other country, you know, we'll be your servants. That's it. We're not going to all get out here and kill each other. Let's just come out here and resolve it one-on-one. So this guy is huge. And if you jump down here reading this story, I won't start in verse 1. Let's go down to verse 4. And a champion went out from the camp of the Philistine named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. And the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. And he had a bronze armor on his legs, a bronze javelin between his shoulders. Now the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels, and a shield bearer went before him. Then he stood and cried out to the armies of Israel and said to them, why have you come out to line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine and you the servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves. Let him come down to me. If he's able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. When Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistine, look what they were. And they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now go down, if you would, to verse 31. So this is going on. Israel is afraid. They got nobody. Now here's what I'd like to insert at the beginning of this. You have to stop looking at what you see and start seeing what you cannot see with eyes of faith. And we'll get to that in a little bit. The giants that you see are not. It's not that they cannot be defeated. You say, but I've got this thing, it's too big. There's no way. Stop thinking and deciding what you can do and ask God what he can do and what he might want to do in and through you. And start with that greater is he who is in me than he who is in the world, no matter how big he who is in the world actually is. Okay, so keep tracking here. Verse 31, now when the words which David spoke were heard, they reported them to Saul, and he sent for him. So young David has shown up saying, and he's heard what's going on. He's like, hey, I can take the guy. Now, he is either very foolish or has a tremendous amount of faith / skill. And if God has prepared you to fight, then he gives you the provision. He gives you the ability to do what you believe can be done, and it actually can be done. So keep reading here. Then David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, you are not able to go up against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are a youth and he a man of war from his youth. You have no idea what you're talking about or what you're doing. But David said to Saul, your servant used to keep his father's sheep. And when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it rose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God. Moreover, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will deliver me from the paw of the Philistine, basically said, the hand of the Philistine. And Saul said to David, well, go and the Lord be with you. Knock yourself out, kid. That's a loose translation, of course. Verse 38, so Saul clothed David with his armor. He put a bronze helmet on his head. He also clothed him with a coat of mail. David fastened his sword to his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. And David said to Saul, I can't walk with these, for I've not tested them. So David took them off. So he said, I can't fight in your armor. Then he took his staff in his hand. He chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in a shepherd's bag in a pouch which he had, and his sling was in his hand. So the slingshot comes in. He's got nothing. He's got a stick, and you know, that'll come out in a minute, a stick and stones and a sling. David was not supernaturally able to sling a stone on the spot. He was prepared because he had practiced. One of my favorite things, I wait 4 years at a time for this, is for the Olympics to show up. And I don't care if they win or lose, I love to see them try. I love to see them win. I love to see them fail even trying. And everyone you see out there trying whatever it is to get to that level, to get to that place, there is a lot of practice somewhere when maybe very few or no one is looking. Nobody sees what's going on. If you do not do the work in private, you will not be ready for public work. You say, God, use me, God, use me, God, use me. Why didn't God use me? You may not be ready to be used because you haven't prepared. You're not practicing. And so when the faith that is needed with the preparation that is needed comes up, you don't stand up because you go, I got nothing. Keep reading. So he picks him 5 stones. Smooth stones. He knows what to pick. Puts them in the shepherd's bag, in a pouch which he had, and his sling was in his hand. And he drew near to the Philistine, and the Philistine came and began drawing near to David, and the man who bore the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and good-looking. So the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? What are you coming out here with a stick for? And the Philistine cursed him by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, come to me, and I'll give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. Then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword, with a spear, and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. So he didn't just say, I'm going to feed your body to the beasts and the birds. I'm going to feed the whole army. Then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. So you say, I got nothing. I don't have any weapons. I'm not big enough. I'm not strong enough. Stop looking at you and look at him. What can he do? What has he done? So it was when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, that David hurried. Look at this. This kid is crazy. He hurries and runs toward the army to meet the Philistine. Then David put his hand in his bag and took out a stone, and he slung it and struck the Philistine in his forehead, so that the stone sank into his forehead, and he fell on his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone and struck the Philistine and killed him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore, David ran, stood over the Philistine, took his sword and drew it out of its sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. So you say, well, did the stone kill him? The stone knocked him down. The sword killed him. He used his own sword to take his life. And when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. Now, here's my whole purpose for reading you the NASCAR deal and talking about this slingshot. This is the part I had missed because we focused so much on David and Goliath. Look at these next verses. And when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. And then what happens? Now the men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines as far as the entrance of the valley to the gates of Ekron. And the wounded of the Philistines fell along the road to Shaaraim, even as far as Gath and Ekron. Then the children of Israel returned from chasing the Philistines and they plundered their tents. What happened? One guy drafted for the whole army was willing to go into battle and do what no one else was willing to do, even believed could be done. And once he did that, he, with a slingshot, hits the giant, but with a slingshot move, using himself, goes in there and whips the whole army around to chase him down. You have no idea what part you are playing or not playing in the lives of people who come behind you. You have to be prepared, and you have to pray, and you have to be available, and you have to believe. And when whatever it is that's coming against whomever or whatever group it is, if he says, you go take a stand, you go take a stand. You say, but nobody's behind me. Everybody's afraid. They may not be afraid once you slay the giant. So keep moving. You're going to get your butt kicked along the way, guys. I'm telling you. You say, well, I'm afraid. If you're fighting the little battles with the lions and the bears, the giants don't seem like much more. And if you're fighting the lions and the bears and winning, then you believe if I can take them, I can take him. And just for the sake of a few more verses, and David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem and put his armor in his tent. So what's the trophy? Not the head, the guy's armor. As a reminder of what? That God does not win by sword and shield. When Saul saw David going out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, Abner, whose son is this youth? And Abner said, as your soul lives, O king, I do not know. So the king said, inquire whose son this young man is. Then as David returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said to him, whose son are you, young man? So David answered, I am the son of your servant, Jesse, the Bethlehemite. Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but David did not become David without Jesse. And unfortunately, we got a lot of kids in our world today that got no Jesse. They got nobody drafting for them. They got nobody helping them. And they're having to drive by themselves. They're having to pedal by themselves. No help, no change out, no rest. No encouragement. So one of the reasons discipleship is so huge and why we hammer it so hard here is that if you are just out there by yourself, not drafting for someone else, and so focused on your life and what you're going to do and who you are and you're winning and not being inconvenienced, you don't help anybody else. You say, but I want to win. I want to win my way. I don't want to help anybody else. Then you may win, but you're going to win by yourself. And not the way God intended. Go to John chapter 3. John chapter 3, great chapter. For the sake of time, let's jump down to verse 22. After these things, Jesus and his disciples came into the land of Judea, and there he remained with them and baptized. Now John also was baptizing in Aenon near Salim, because there was much water there. And they came and were baptized, and John had not yet been thrown into prison. Then there arose a dispute between some of John's disciples and the Jews about purification. And they came to John and said to him, Rabbi, he who was with you beyond the Jordan, to whom you have testified, behold, he is baptizing and all are coming to him. John answered and said, a man can receive nothing unless it has been given to him from heaven. So whatever you got from heaven. You say, no, I'm a self-made man. That is one of the dumbest things you could ever say. Amen. When you hear someone say, oh, I'm a self-made man. So you got yourself born. You got yourself conceived. Just absurd stuff people come up with. A man can receive nothing unless it has been given to him from heaven. You yourselves bear me witness that I said, that you guys know what I told you. I am not the Christ, but I have been sent before him. So basically, John's doing the drafting, making a way for Jesus. He who has the bride is the bridegroom, but the friend of the bridegroom would be John, who stands and hears him, rejoices greatly because of the bridegroom's voice. Therefore, this joy of mine is fulfilled. In other words, I've heard his voice. He's here. I've done my job. And then look at verse 30. Underline, if you're comfortable underlining your Bible, underline this. Talking about Jesus, John says this, he must increase, but I must decrease. Back to the Tour de France. The reason, and I can still ride a bike. I like to ride a bike, but I am in awe of what these guys do for weeks on end on these mountain. It's just insane what they can sustain. And there are riders on teams who know when they are hired to be on that team that they will not win the race. Their job is not to win the race. Their job is to work so that one person on the team who is intended to win the race wins the race. And you will see at the end of the race, these guys pedaling like crazy in the sprint toward the finish line, and they will give it all they've got drafting for the guy that they want to win who's behind them. And when they've exhausted everything they have, they peel off and slingshot him to the finish line. He said, but I want to win. I want the glory. Your life will never work if you don't give up the glory. You say, I want someone to know me. I want someone to love me. I want someone to look at me and think great things about me. You will never get there because it will never be enough. No matter how many people know, how many people listen, how many people follow you, it will never satisfy because until he gets the glory, you'll have nothing, nothing. And I see people who chase things with all of their heart, with all of their soul, with all of their might, chase something and give their entire life to it. And then it evaporates on them because it wasn't enough. You say, but I think God's called me to greatness. Then let him make you great. Don't you make you great and then say God did it. Humble yourself under the mighty hand of God and in due time, he will lift you up. Let him do the lifting. Don't you do the lifting because it's heavy lifting and it'll wear you out trying. So you say, Lord, I yield my life to you. And whether it's significant or not, it doesn't matter. My job is to make you significant. My job is to not make me famous. My job is to make you famous. The sooner you figure out that it's not about you, the sooner it's going to start working. I just have to tell the story. One of the guys in our church, a young golfer, pro golfer, got married up in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I went up there with another friend a day or so early. We played golf with this guy, had a great time. The wedding was on a Friday, and I went up on a Wednesday. And even getting up there on a Wednesday, I thought, wow, what am I doing up here? It's like a whole day just to play. I guess that's okay, but I felt kind of weird. And I thought, no, it's okay. I'm stopping. I'm resting. It'll be okay. So the three of us played golf, had dinner, went back to the hotel, and stayed in the room for a little bit. And the guy that I was with, really, he was a little bit sore from the day, said, there's a pool. There's a hot tub. Let's go down to the hot tub. Well, when we had gotten to this hotel, when we got out of our car, an entire bus of about 50, 20-something-year-old guys got off this bus at the same time, went in the hotel. I was like, wow, what was that? So we were in the room, finally he said, let's go down there. So we go down there, we get in this big, and there's like 13 people in this hot tub. Six of them are these kids. So we're in the hot tub, and I'm thinking, okay, Lord, I'm not here by chance. What's going on? What is this about? So it turns out six of these guys that we were talking to played for a soccer team. They had just been in the country for 2 weeks in Spencer, Iowa, and were playing in a tournament in Minneapolis. And six of those 50 or so were in the hot tub. And one of them had a tattoo on his chest. You got to watch for things. It said, thank God I'm blessed. And I said, hey, tell me about your tattoo. He said, oh, it's nothing. That's just something stupid I did when I was 15. So denied his tat. If you're going to deny him, put him somewhere where people can't see him. So I thought, well, something about that. So these were kids from, one was from Spain, one was from Mexico, two or three from England, one from Australia. They were from everywhere and had ended up in Spencer, Iowa to play soccer. So I kind of sat there. They kind of had a curfew, kept talking about getting up, getting out, and it never went anywhere. And I thought, wow, that's weird. These kids, there are these kids. There's got to be some opportunity. So they got up, went into the hallway of the hotel, and we got up. We were hot, time to go. So we get up, walk in the hotel, and now there's nine of them. Three more have shown up by the Coke machine. So I walked down this hallway and I'm like, Lord, they're still here. Now there's more of them. And I told them that I'd grown up in England, Brazil, played soccer, all that I could come up with to connect. And now there's an Ivory Coast and a Liberian in the hallway, which I've been to both of those places. And I'm like, Lord, something's going on. So I stopped with my friend and these nine soccer players, these 20-year-olds. And I said, look, I said, this may not make a bit of sense to all of you, but I said, we are not here by chance. You're not here by chance, and I'm not here by chance. And I said, I'm almost positive that some of you have been thinking about dying. And two guys raised their hand. So standing in this hallway of this hotel, I presented the gospel to these nine young men and told them that God loved them and that this is how you could be sure if you weren't sure. And I said, I'd like to pray for you. And then if you are interested in becoming a Christian, then I'd like you to pray with me. So I huddled them up. And I prayed for them. And then I said, so if you want to become a Christian, pray after me. And all nine of them, almost as loud as they could, dear God, in a panic almost, dear God, I know I'm a sinner. And I believe that Jesus died on the cross, was buried, and raised from the dead. I ask you to come live in me and through me and change me. And then amen and amen. And they looked up at me and they started taking pictures. I gave them all my cell phone number, which was probably a big mistake. And he said, well, why do you tell that story? You have to pay attention. You are on the planet for a reason. And you're supposed to be out there ahead leading. And you are surrounded with people who cannot pedal anymore. They got nothing. They need someone to come alongside and say, hey, tuck in behind me. Listen, I'll help you. I'll disciple you. I'll be the dad you didn't have. I'll be the coach that tries to encourage you. Maybe you don't have anybody. You're up. You cannot sit on your butt anymore and act like it's going to happen without you. If it was supposed to happen without you when you became a Christian, you'd be dead. He'd get you out of here. Why would he leave us down here in this mess any longer than we have to be here? He has us here for a reason. Find out what your reason is and start drafting for some people. You say, well, I don't have the strength to do that. Then find someone to draft for you and get some speed up and let them slingshot you so that you're in a position to do it for someone else.
Before Richard comes back to wrap things up for us today, I'd like to share a couple important things with you. Let me encourage you to take a minute and check out our website, richardellistalks.com. You'll find today's talk right there on the talks page, along with all of Richard's messages. You can even forward them to a friend so they can hear them too. You'll also find the prayer wall to add your prayer requests, a link to connect with us, the contribute page for you to be able to give to this ministry, a radio station finder, all our social media links, and much more. So check it out. RichardEllisTalks.com. And Richard's back now to wrap up today's talk.
So you think, well, God's not doing anything in the world. In the world I live in, something's going on. And I'm telling you, it's the same world you live in. It's not that nothing's going on out there. It may be that nothing's going on in here all the time. So find you a closet somewhere and say, Lord, if you're at work, I don't feel like I'm at work where you're at work. So what's going on with me? Have I gotten cold, calloused? Is there sin in my life? Am I chasing happiness instead of holiness? And so busy throwing stones that I don't use the slingshot to kill giants and make a way for somebody else. God is at work. And every day that passes, I meet more and more desperate people. 20-year-old men jumping on Jesus because they got nothing. because they realize pretty quick it doesn't work. You can only chase so many women, win so many games, do so many drugs. There's nothing. The world's got nothing compared to Jesus. And when they hear about Jesus, they're in, because he is the answer.
You've been listening to Richard Ellis Talks. We really appreciate that you've spent this time with us, but we want to keep the conversation going with you. A couple of ways you can connect with us is by giving us a call anytime at 855-6-RICHARD. That's 855-6-RICHARD. Another way is through our website, richardellistalks.com. You can email us, sign up to get the daily talk sent to your phone each day, right on the prayer wall where we can pray for you, or even stay in touch through our Facebook page at Talk with Richard. We love bringing you the program every day, but it means even more to us when you let us know how the program has helped you. So call 855-6-RICHARD or connect with us at our website, richardellistalks.com. Finally, if you enjoy the program, let us know by your generous support. It would really mean a lot to us. richardellistalks.com. So until next time, have a great day, and thank you for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.